This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Live Web Radio Broadcast, broadcasting to the entire world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may live upon the earth. Great to be with you. A lot is going on. You know, the other day I read you some excerpts from the Jerusalem Post article, and it was very, very fascinating. It was a very fascinating piece in that the Jerusalem Post, it's easy to get them confused these days, the Washington Post and Jerusalem Post, because they represent the same political line. And anyway, they had a fine and interesting article called Top White House Posts Go to Jews. Now, if I would have written an article of that nature, if I would have said, top White House posts go to Jews, I'd be in trouble. So I'm going to talk about that article today, and I'm going to uncover a little picture that I dug up on the Internet. It took me a lot of searching, but I found a very interesting picture from the White House. It looks more like the Knesset, which illustrates the issue of the article. And we have that posted on davidduke.com and also, of course, on stormfront.org. So I'm going to talk about that in a moment. I want to mention to you that an interesting individual who was an early supporter of mine, at least in the media, kind of amazing, but he's being criticized by a lot of sources because of it. His name is Snow, Tony Snow. And Snow is now the press secretary of the president, so he does some things interestingly, and he does some things that I cannot abide by. But Snow's big era, according to the Democratic Party, in fact, they have a press release out on the U.S. News Wire right now, and I'll quote to you from it. It's interesting. It says, Snow defended David Duke. In 1991, then White House speechwriter Tony Snow defended former KKK leader David Duke, saying, Duke is talking about things people really care about. High taxes, crummy schools, crime-ridden streets, welfare dependency, equal opportunity. A lot of politicians aren't talking about these things. It's from Chicago Tribune, 11/20/91. Well, that's enough to take somebody's head off, obviously, to say anything positive about David Duke. And again, you notice that the article says former KKK leader David Duke. Is that now part of my birth certificate? My God, is there anybody in America who knows the name David Duke without knowing former KKK member or leader or activist or whatever in front of it? And sometimes they put some additional adjectives and some additional prefixes in front of my name and suffixes past my name. Ladies and gentlemen, it's a crazy system. But when the press is against you, or when certain factors in the press have control of the press, they're able to paint you any way they want to paint you. If you are former Klansman Robert Byrd, but you'd become somewhat liberal on some issues, then you're Senator Robert Byrd, or you're statesman Robert Byrd. You're not former Ku Klux Klansman Robert Byrd, even though most people in the know about that. And it's a legitimate part of my past that I was in the KKK. There's no doubt about that. And that's legitimate. And I don't object people knowing to it. But the way the press uses it, it's been almost 30 years. As somebody said in that record, a good friend of mine said in that record, come on, man, it's been almost 30 years ago today. Why can't they talk about the issues? It's not... The problem with David Duke is not his past. A lot of people have controversial past. Teddy Kennedy is the hero of Chappaquiddick. Bobby Rush is a former Black Panther. Jesse Jackson used to brag about spitting in white people's food. But you see, it depends. The way they label you is not by what your past is. It's by what you do presently. It's about what your political agenda is, what you talk about. And what I talk about, one of the main things I talk about, is exposing the power of Jewish supremacism. And ladies and gentlemen, this latest article where I have exposed what the Jerusalem Post has said, what's going on in the White House of the United States, and I'm going to tell you some very shocking things this evening. By the way, excuse me for running the program a little early tonight, but I've got some speaking engagements here in Eastern Europe this evening, and so I've just got a commitment, so I've got to do the program a little early. It may affect the audiences, but I know so many of you are listening to this program on the archive basis. This is one you're not going to want to miss. It's going to be one that you're going to want to send to your friends, because I think it's a very, very powerful program with a very powerful issue. And I can tell you something. I know something about debating. I took speech in university, and I debated all my life. In fact, I debated from the time I was 13 or 14 when I began to become enlightened on these issues. And I've learned the techniques of debate, and I've read a lot about it, obviously. The only thing that I really like in the movies, the best thing that I like in the movies, is when you have a really great speech or you have a really great argument. And in some ways, I like the courtroom drama on television, because in the courtroom drama, sometimes you see some great turn of phrases. And I tell you one thing, the Jewish writers are very good at that, and they're very powerful at that. But one debating argument, which is very essential and very profound, is that when you catch your enemy in a lie, when you catch them in a misstep, when you catch them doing something that really exposes them for what they are, then you latch onto that and you don't let go, like a snapping turtle. You latch onto it and you hit it again and again and again until people begin to see the gravity of what you're talking about, until they begin to see this entity in the same way that you see them. Because we have some evidence today that I'm going to present that's so powerful, and it's absolutely undeniable, it's incontrovertible, it's irrefutable. And we have to take this message, and we have to take these facts and issues and drive them home again and again to the American people. Now, I hope that those of you listening on the web right now will turn to my website, davidduke.com, or at Stormfront in the Town Hall section. You can go to it. And by the way, I will try to get to your emails this evening. I will try to answer any direct questions. You can do that on stormfront.org, the Town Hall section. You can post a question or comment. If you're not a member yet, join. You can do it right now while the program's going on. Or you can send me an email directly at info44@davidduke.com. And by the way, if you have an info44 address in your browser or in your mail server, make sure that you look at the website to send me future emails, because we're getting a bit of spam, and it's getting time that we'll change that address. So again, my address is info44@davidduke.com. If you have a question about any of this or a comment, be sure to send it to me right away. In the next couple of minutes, I will try to get through it and to it when I get finished this section on the top White House post going to Jews and extremist Jews at that. Also, I will try to continue, not today, but I'll try to continue tomorrow, my series on the roots of anti-Semitism. What is anti-Semitism? Why has there been so-called anti-Semitism in the world? What are some of the reasons for it? A little different view than you get in the encyclopedias when you read nothing but Jewish authors and Jewish extremists telling you, Jewish supremacists actually, who support Israel and Jewish supremacy over Gentiles and Jewish anger toward Gentiles. They are the ones who tell us what anti-Semitism is, and of course, according to their presentation, Jews have always been just innocent little lambs, and these Gentiles are just evil. They just hate Jews because they're Jews. And if you really look at a lot of the Jewish websites, that's what you see. They just have this evil gene. And the truth is that there are major Jewish organizations who actually believe that. And they believe that Gentiles are not even human beings. This is not all Jews, but it's certainly a sector of Jews, and a very powerful sector. In fact, on my website, you will see a picture of a group of them having a nice party with their fellow Jew by the name of Bolton, who's now in charge of White House policy. And these Jews are members of an organization called the Chabad Lubavitch, or Lubavitcher, and this organization is a powerful multi-million-dollar organization that exists in many countries around the world, has tremendous influence, by the way, in the Israeli Knesset, has influence in our own government, as you can see. And this organization, its basic tenets preach that Gentiles are, in effect, not even human beings. I'm not joking with you. And they had one of their officials actually lecture their fellow Jews in the White House of the United States. Go to my website, take a look at the picture, and you'll see a very interesting picture of this Rabbi Levi Shem Tov, and you'll also see the new head of White House policy, Joshua Bolten, surrounded by these extremist anti-Gentile Jews at the very heart of the executive branch of the United States government. Now, the picture that you'll see is not taken in Israel. It was taken in the White House. Pictured is Chabad Lubavitch, Rabbi Shem Tov, and other shlikim. Shlikim means emissaries of the Chabad Lubavitch. And their emissaries, in their own websites, they say they're emissaries who affect the politics of countries and affect the politics of the communities in which they live. As you can hear, my good sidekick, man's best friend, is agreeing with me on this. And they're shown surrounding and smiling, celebrating, actually, with the new head of White House policy, Joshua Bolten. They're celebrating Jewish preeminence at a White House party. Now, I'm going to read to you what the Jerusalem Post has to say about it in an article that appeared a couple days ago in that publication. And today I'm going to show you and read to you and quote to you from the Chabad Lubavitch movement itself, from some of their websites, about their attitude toward Gentiles. And I'm going to give you links for those sites so you can do some research on your own and find out the truth. The organization that's represented by Rabbi Levi Shem Tov, by the way, again, who gives prayers and preaches and teaches in the White House today, maintains that Gentiles are animals and that the entire purpose of non-Jewish mankind, and by the way, non-Jewish mankind, that's 97% of America, the American people, and 99.6% of the Earth's population, but the purpose, the entire purpose of non-Jewish mankind is to, quote, serve Jews. Now, if you find that hard to believe, just listen and please don't trust anything I say. Go research it and keep researching until you find out the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth about Jewish supremacism. You know, my amazement will never cease when it comes to the tortured admissions of the Jewish extremists. Of course, they face a dilemma. How do they inform their flock of their power and at the same time trivialize it for Gentile consumption? You know, at one point, they boast about their influence in government. And in the next instance, they deny they have any. They condemn commentators such as myself and the authors of the recent Harvard paper, Professors Walt and Mersheimer, for pointing out the enormous influence of Jewish-Israeli extremists in American politics. And then in the next breath, they boast of their incredible influence. I will offer some excerpts from an article recently appearing in the Jerusalem Post, which is one of the most prestigious daily newspapers in Israel and read by considerable numbers of non-Jews. Because of its significant Gentile readership, the Jerusalem Post is far more guarded than many other Jewish publications and much less cautious than the Hebrew language dailies published in Israel and abroad. And by the way, I must say it's much more soft-spoken. I've read many translations of the Hebrew language dailies and Hebrew publications, and it's amazing the hatred expressed often toward the Gentile community in them. Thank God for the fact that we've had men such as Avni, men such as Israel Shahak, Israel Shamir, and other courageous Jews who've been willing to translate the Hebrew into English so most of our people know what's being said. Because again, the mainstream isn't going to translate these things for our consumption. Now, let's begin a short analysis by noting the headline. The headline reads, Top White House Posts Go to Jews. Now, imagine if Professors Walt and Mearsheimer, or even I, came out with a statement or press release titled, Top White House Posts Go to Jews. Or imagine if any member of Congress had the temerity simply to say that the White House policy is now in the hands of Jews. Well, if I say it, or you say it, it's anti-Semitism. But if Jewish newspapers say it, somehow it's not. Somehow it's anti-Semitic for DavidDuke.com to headline it. But it's not anti-Semitic for the Jerusalem Post to headline it. Now notice the first two paragraphs of the article. After saying that the White House policy is now in the hands of two Jews, they immediately say this fact is not seen as significant by activists in the American Jewish community. Quote, after appointing Joshua Bolton to the White House Chief of Staff, U.S. President George W. Bush nominated another Jewish staffer, Joel Kaplan, to serve as Bolton's deputy, putting him in charge of the daily policy planning. The fact that White House policy is now in the hands of two Jews is not seen as significant by activists in the American Jewish community. Of course, the obvious question is, if the fact that the White House policy being now in the hands of two Jews is not significant, then why, pray tell, is this major article in the Jerusalem Post there in the first place? And truly, can it not be significant that two Jewish partisans for Israel, radical Jewish partisans for Israel, now hold White House policy in their hands? And that's in their hands, unquote. Does it make more sense for White House policy to be held in the hands of men who are dedicated to the interests of the United States? I would think so. Does it make more sense for the policy of the White House to be held in the hands of men not affected by any extreme partisanship for a foreign country? I would think so. You know, in the course of this program, many things I must say. But frankly, the most important issue is that the Jewish-influenced White House is sounding more like the functioning of the Israeli cabinet rather than the American executive branch. We hear about Jewish prayers and symbolism, Jewish ethnocentric celebrations such as Purim in the White House. And Purim, of course, is a celebration of the massacre of Haman and of Gentiles who threatened Jews. And we even hear in this article of a Chabad Lubavitch rabbi, Levi Shemtov, reading the Purim Megillah. And that is the account of the Jewish and Persian conflict whereby the Jews massacred 75,000 Persians. Now here's the exact words of the Jerusalem Post. Quote, one tradition likely to go on is the reading of the Purim Megillah led by Chabad rabbi Levi Shemtov, which attracts many of the Jewish staffers. How many Jewish staffers are there in the White House? Now, this is in the White House. This is not in Congress. We're talking about White House here. The Purim Megillah is a lesson for Jews to always stick together and fight for Jewish interests against Gentiles and to strike down Gentiles who they believe threaten them, who threaten Jewish interests. Now, is that what the Jewish staffers want to hear? And what exactly is the Chabad? The Chabad preaches that all Jews are the sons of God, and that's in their words, and that Gentiles are a different species altogether, with evil souls of an inferior order. It preaches that the purpose of the very existence of Gentiles is to serve Jews. It preaches that Israel must rule the entire world. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it has a representative of this organization and of this philosophy now gracing the interior of our White House. Another primary value of the Chabad movement is that Gentiles are not even human beings, that they are in fact nothing more than animals. We are animals, ladies and gentlemen, according to the Chabad Lubavitch movement. These are fundamental to this movement. You can read the writings of the great Rebbe. You can read their fundamental work. You can go to their websites, and you can check it out for themselves. Well, I saved you a little trouble. I went to one of the websites, and I'll give you a link in davidduke.com, and you can check this link out for yourself, and you can see exactly what I'm talking about here. I have an article that I've linked. This is from one of the Chabad websites, Gentiles and Halakha, Between the Jews and Gentiles in the Haggadah, the Kabbalah, and in Jewish Thought. And here's some excerpts. And now this, you got to remember as I'm reading this that one of the Jewish rabbis is preaching in the White House, is a member of the organization that represents these ideas and these philosophies toward Gentiles. Quote, you are called men, the image of God in man. The Ravad, we have already mentioned the words of the Ravad with regards to animals slaughtered by a Gentile. For the Gentiles are like animals, and one who thinks of them as something worthwhile will gather the wind in his fist. In fact, this website, which you can read at your leisure, has many, many quotes more than I can quote here, and they all are the same basic value. And what they're doing here on this site is they're showing their fellow members of Chabad that Gentiles are evil, and they're getting rid of the whole idea that there's any sort of egalitarianism or equality between Jews and Gentiles, that Gentiles certainly are of an entirely different world. Here's another quote. In Netzach Yisrael, chapter 14, page 83, it's written, Israel is special and separate from all the Gentiles, for the Gentiles are on a materialistic level, whereas Israel is on the form level. As Chazal said, you are called men, and the nations are not called men. As though it were an ordinary thing for them that the comparison between Israel and the Gentiles is similar to the comparison between man and animals who cannot speak. And this is because man is distinct from animals and that he's not materialistic and physical like the rest of the animal world. Man is intelligent. Jews, therefore, are the true humanity, whereas the Gentiles are only on a low level of humanity. Jews are true humanity from its authentic roots, whereas other nations are on the level of man in his fallen state and therefore are treated as ones belonging to a completely different genera. One who reads the words of Ermakel will notice how precisely he chose them and how accurately represent the words of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. You are called men. Another, G. Rabbi Shtak Ha Cohen of Lublin, in the book Poked Akram, page 19, column 3, he wrote, concerning what's explained in the Yevamot, you are called men and not the other nations. The meaning is that the Gentiles were deprived of the title men only where Israel were called men, because in comparison to I, who are the primary form of man in this divine chariot, it is irrelevant to call any of the Gentiles men. At most, they are like animals in the form of men. Taken as themselves, however, the children of Noah are considered men, and when the Messiah comes, they too will recognize and admit that there are none called man except Israel. Anyway, in comparison to Israel, even now, they are in the category of animals. Goes on. Before the giving of the Torah, the souls of the nations and of Israel were all at one level, for good and evil and the filth of the snake were all combined. When Israel received the Torah, were chosen to be a special nation, and filth ceased to exist in them, and consequently, the roots of their souls were separated from those of the Gentiles. And all the good was rooted and set aside for the souls of Israel. All the evil found root in the souls of other nations, for they are all part of the evil and Satan's camp. Well, that, you know, if you read these quotes, you understand also when you read about anti-Semitism in our encyclopedias, which are almost most of the articles written by Jews themselves, most of the reference books are written by Jews themselves. You understand what they're saying when they try to say that all the conflict between Jews and Gentiles revolves around innocent, wonderful Jews and evil, evil Gentiles. They believe it. They truly believe it. And so I guess it's easy for them to write such. And Shaar Kapit Noga, chapter 3, it's written. This is all from the Chabad website. Now you understand what the animalistic soul of man is. It is the good and evil inclination in man. The soul of Gentiles comes from the three klipot, wind, cloud, and fire, all of them evil. So is the case with impure animals, beasts, and birds. However, the animalistic soul of Israel and the animalistic soul of pure animals, beasts, and birds all come from Noga. In the continuation there is written, Rabbi Eliezer said, it supports what we said above, that have a living soul. These are the Jews, for they have the high and holy living soul. And the verse, animals, creeping things, and beasts of the earth, each to its kind, refers to Gentiles, for they have no living soul, but only the prepus, as we've said above. They stem from the powers of the left side, which defile them, the sulam. Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, that's from Between the Jews and Gentiles, and that's from one of the Chabad websites. And there's many other stuff, that much other material, that completely conforms with that position. It's just quite amazing to read these things. And a man who represents the movement that has these fundamental views toward Gentiles is now preaching in the White House of the United States of America. Don't any of you find that quite interesting, ladies and gentlemen? Do any of you understand the nature of this problem? Look, there's another Jewish site that's also a Chabad source. It's called Yiddishkeit.org. Yiddishkeit, K-E-I-T.org. Now they have a quotation here for Gentiles. So this is obviously, they have a little section for Gentiles to read. So this is obviously written from a very mild standpoint. I mean, they don't put the stuff in there how Gentiles are animals for the non-Jews to read, but they also expect Gentiles to become righteous, what they call righteous Gentiles. And what is a righteous Gentile to the Chabad and these radical Jews? Well, a righteous Gentile is one who recognizes that the Jews are nothing but gods. They are the sons of God, they are gods. And that they will totally submit themselves to the rule of the Jew. I will quote directly from that website, Yiddishkeit.org. Here's a quote, as mentioned above, every Jew is a, quote, son of God, whereas a non-Jew is intended to be a servant of God. Although the Jew, in essence, is always a son, when he's without this status by manifesting the essence of his divine soul, he's also referred to as servant. Though in relation to Jewish consciousness, this is definitely a fall. In relation to creation as a whole, it serves a positive purpose. As we've seen, the Jew must show the way to the non-Jew. When a Jew demonstrates a status of servant, he inspires the non-Jew to rise to the same level and thus become a servant of God. All right, and so the non-Jew becomes a servant of God is to serve the Jews who are, in fact, God, the sons of God. I mean, we can go on. The conscious of servitude is identified in the Kabbalah with the divine attribute of splendor, whose inner dimension is sincerity. In sincerity, one stands before one's master in total submission of self and absolute commitment of will. This sincere state of submission, this is for Gentile consumption, ladies and gentlemen. We are supposed to submit to their, you know, to their rule, whatever that's supposed to mean. Sincerity is a branch of awe. When a non-Jew learns submission and commitment from the Jew, he comes to serve God with both awe and joy simultaneously. You know, it's, again, they try to put it in soft words, obviously, but it's very, very clear how they view a Gentile. Another good example, and this is again, this is from Inner Org, Noahide, and this is again from Chabad websites. As mentioned above, a large percentage of the non-Jewish world worships an individual Jew. The non-Jewish world must come to recognize that all Jews are the sons of God. The non-Jew must strive to help God's children fulfill their purpose to bring redemption to the world, and then will the true Mashiach reveal himself. That's like the true Messiah. I guess the Messiah that will give total Jewish rule of the earth. All souls long to ascend from animal to man to take hold, as it were, God's signature is represented by Israel. I mean, we can go on and on and on. Another quotation, it is thus the ultimate purpose of the non-Jewish world to make this world a pleasant home, a worthy abode for the Jewish people to enter and bless. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, isn't that nice? That's the purpose of Gentiles. The purpose of the Gentile is to serve the Jews. That's the entire purpose of the Gentile race, the Gentile people on the planet. That's 97%, better than 97% of the American people, and better than 99.6% of the worldwide people, or the people of the entire world. Here's a thing from Lubavitcher Rebbe for Shabbat, and they talk here, and this is kind of interesting. They have a terribly destructive. People talk about Iran's predictions on Israel. Well, they have some pretty terrible predictions about us. The destruction and nullification of those negative factors which cannot be elevated to holiness. For this reason, we may find prophecies describing the fall of the nations that ruled over the Jews. Babylon has fallen, and she will be broken. There will be a slaughter of God in Bathra, and saviors will ascend to Mount Zion to judge the Mount of Asaph. The only nations which will remain will be those that help and support the Jewish people. And it goes on, ladies and gentlemen. It goes on to talk about how Jews have a right to rule the world. Well, we're out of time today for this program, but I hope that you've found some very interesting, very, very interesting aspects of what's going on. I mean, I can quote to you for another 30 minutes of some of the of some of these different quotes. You know, here's one quote: the difference between a Jewish soul and the souls of non-Jews, all of them in different levels, is greater and deeper than the difference between a human soul and the souls of cattle. Isn't that nice? I mean, this is, you know, and I'm called a hater and a bigot. I guess I'm called a hater and a bigot because I don't like being called an animal. You know, again, I always talk about this. They always criticize Hitler. They say Hitler was a terrible, terrible racist. And he talked about in Mein Kampf, he said he saw on the streets of Vienna a earlocked Jewish individual, and he said, "Is this a Jew?" And he said, "Is this also a German?" But the Talmud and these radical extremist Jews, who are now even in the White House of the United States of America, don't even believe that Gentiles, you know, question about Gentiles being a Jew, they question whether they're human beings at all. Unbelievable. Here's another quotation. This is from Tishbe and Vital's writings. Souls of non-Jews come entirely from the female part of the satanic sphere. For this reason, souls of non-Jews are called evil, not good, and created without divine knowledge. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. It's just incredible. Here's another quotation. Here's from the great Rebbe. This is the man that Mr. Shemtov reveres. All the Chabad revere this man, which was Rabbi Snierson, and it was called the great Rebbe, or Rebbe. See, the difference between a Jewish and non-Jewish person stems from the common expression, let us differentiate. Thus, we do not have a case of profound change in which a person is merely on a superior level. Rather, we have a case of let us differentiate between totally different species. This is what needs to be said about the body. The body of a Jewish person is a totally different quality than the body of members of all nations of the world. I mean, there you go. I mean, in fact, one of these Jewish radicals said there's nothing wrong, in fact, of taking a liver from a live Gentile, putting it into a Jew to save the life of a Jew. They literally used those terms. It's also said, a quotation, that the entire creation of the non-Jews, of the non-Jewish world, exists only for the sake of Jews. No wonder they don't have any worry about sacrificing American lives in Iraq for the interests of Israel. No wonder they don't. We can just go ahead and they can go ahead and do it. Let me give you one of the quotes, and then I'm going to close it for today, and I'm going to see if we have any other. I should go ahead and give a check on the Stormfront posts or letters. Let me hit the letter issue here. I know I've got some emails coming in. So just a second, I'm going to check that right now. All right. Got it. Okay. All right, let me get it there. All right. This is an amazing quote, and then I'm going to go Stormfront, and then I'm going to call it a day. Regarded as one of the Lubavitcher sect's leading authorities on Jewish mysticism, the St. Louis-born rabbi, who has a graduate degree in mathematics, his name is Ginsberg, Rabbi Ginsberg, speaks freely of Jews' genetic-based spiritual superiority over non-Jews. It is a superiority that he asserts invests Jewish life with a greater value in the eyes of the Torah. Quote, if you saw two people drowning, a Jew and a non-Jew, the Torah says you save the Jewish life first, Rabbi Ginsberg told the Jewish Week. And this is a quote directly from Jewish Week, ladies and gentlemen, the largest Jewish organization in the United States. Quote, if every, largest Jewish publication, I should say, if every simple cell in a Jewish body entails divinity, is a part of God, then every strand of DNA is a part of God. Therefore, something is special about Jewish DNA. Then Rabbi Ginsberg asked rhetorically, quote, if a Jew needs a liver, can you take the liver of an innocent non-Jew passing by to save him? The Torah would probably permit that. Jewish life has infinite value, he explained. There is something infinitely more holy and unique about Jewish life than non-Jewish life. Ladies and gentlemen, it's just amazing. That's the positions of the Chabad, and we've got a Chabad rabbi speaking, lecturing, and being honored in the White House, being greeted by the President of the United States. You have a nice picture on my website of the President of the United States and the First Lady meeting with these leading Chabad rabbis. Men that believe that Gentiles are animals, men that support the idea that Israel must rule the world, men that support the idea that Gentiles have evil souls. I know it sounds incredible, but it's a reality of life, ladies and gentlemen, and that's what's going on in the world today. You see what I've got coming on here? All right. So we're just about ready to wrap up the program, ladies and gentlemen, and I'll certainly be with you again tomorrow. Let me get into our details. We covered a lot of ground, and I think it's important ground, and it's principles we need to understand. Take a look at my website, davidduke.com and stormfront.org. Please take these articles, get them on every website you can around the country, around the world, and help other people learn about what's going on. It's intolerable that these extreme, radical, anti-Gentile, hateful leaders of these organizations are now literally controlling the White House of the United States of America. And finally, one question from Stormfront. He says, this is from Contrails, he says, Dr. Duke, could you please state your opinion on those who promote violence, arson, vandalism, death threats, and other such crimes as potential tools and tactics for white nationalists? Could you also state your opinion about those who publicly and enthusiastically applaud these acts when they occur? When I see or hear this, I think cops, Mossad, La Raza, etc. Obviously, this is what the Mossad wants from us, violence, vandalism, and applause for when it occurs. Would you agree that anyone who complies with what the Mossad wants them to do is a Zionist pawn, whether they realize it or not? I absolutely agree with you. I think you're absolutely correct. This is precisely what our enemies want. Ladies and gentlemen, taking out a few of the evil people, like the people I mentioned here, does not do our cause any good. I don't think any sort of gratuitous violence or murder or mayhem is a justifiable thing. I'm a moral man. I'm a Western man. I'm a white man. And I believe in treating people decently and in a dignified fashion. And I don't believe that I'm expressing the kind of hatred, for instance, that the Chabad expresses toward us, that these radical revolutionary Jews express toward us. If you want to see hatred, just read how the press and these organizations like the Southern Poverty Law Center and these other law centers treat people like myself. You go to them, it's like a National Enquirer site. Any rumor, any lie, any misrepresentation they can do. I'm a public figure, you can't sue them. You certainly can't win in that kind of situation because public figures can't sue effectively. But they can say anything they want to say. And they have hatred which pours from them on a continual basis. There's no question in my mind that any time there is an act where one or two Jews are harmed, what's going on there is that they have an opportunity then in their press domination and control to show to people that we are the evil ones. They don't talk about the racism, the supremacy of the Chabad. They don't talk about the terrible murders, oppressions, and tortures on a daily basis in Israel, the murder that goes on by the Israeli state. They talk about a Hamas bomber, which no one can defend, but they don't talk about Israel dropping bombs on refugee camps or in neighborhoods and apartments and killing scores of children any time. They don't talk about that, ladies and gentlemen. They don't talk about the terrible theft and violence and destruction of the terrorist state of Israel. They don't talk about Israel's terrorism against the United States of America. Now, I think that when we do those kinds of acts, that we are doing exactly what they want. And I quote in my book, Jewish Supremacism, from Errol Sharon and some of these very radical and hateful Jewish leaders, and he himself indicates in an article in an interview with Amos Oz, one of the major Jewish journalists in Israel, that he himself would not be beyond planting bombs in synagogues to not only get the Jews to rise up and support their own cause more thoroughly, financially and spiritually and activism-wise, and to also to hurt the Gentile resistance against them. That's exactly what that kind of thing does. You know, a few Jews are taken out, but what happens, ladies and gentlemen, is the rest of them are more motivated, they give more to their cause, they're more oriented exactly toward their particular agenda, as if they're not already, but they're really oriented at that point. And Gentiles then are flooded with this propaganda, and Gentiles have lost their sense of resistance and their really sense of ethical right in defending themselves. Well, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. I sure do appreciate you being with me today. We've had a very good show, and I will be with you tomorrow, and we're going to continue tomorrow on what I call some of the roots of anti-Semitism, and we're going to go into business, stock market, and how the economic nature of a nation is changed by a Jewish economic team strategy. Thanks so much, and I'll see you again tomorrow. Bye-bye now.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.daviddukes.com.